Hey everyone, I'm interrupting this episode because I want to tell you about a free masterclass that I'm hosting. I'm constantly hearing from motion designers and studio owners that they just don't have the time to work on their businesses. And I get it, it's hard to wear all the hats in your business and stay on top of everything. When the project ends, do you find yourself scrambling for the next gig on LinkedIn or sending a ton of cold emails? This just isn't sustainable in the long run. I found that building systems and processes in my business to free up my time was the best way to grow a business and have more time to do the things that I love. It's not easy, but I want to share with you what I've learned over the past few years and also what I've been teaching my students in my courses. So I'm hosting a free masterclass on the 21st of May for freelance motion designers and studio owners who are looking for more balance. After Balance Business Masterclass, you're going to walk away with a system to help you save time, make more money, and work on fun and creative projects. Of course, I'll also be doing a live Q&A to answer any questions that you have. And I'm going to invite just 20 people to work with me inside my coaching program, Balance Business Bootcamp. This won't open again until later this year. So if you want to get access to that and you want to join us in this free masterclass, then go and find the link in the show notes to register or go to motionhatch.com/pod. Hope to see you in there. Now let's get back to this episode.
So I sat on the first rough cut and they're like, what's this? And I'm like, well, this is like, you know, we talked about the rough pass and they're like, have you done this before? I was like, what do you mean? They're like, do you actually know how to do motion graphics? I'm like, are you seriously? Like, and they just kept digging in and digging in about how horrible I was and how horrible this piece was and how embarrassed they were and they couldn't show it to the client. And so like, I felt so defeated.
Hey Hatchlings, welcome to the Motion Hatch podcast. I'm your host, Hayley Akins. Hey Hatchlings, welcome to episode 97 of the Motion Hatch podcast. Today on the show, I wanted to do something a little bit different. So on the 21st of October, we are finally going to be launching our YouTube channel. It's actually a little bit scary saying that because I know that I'm drawing a line in the sand and I'm making a commitment to you now that we are going to launch this channel on the 21st of October. So mark that date in your diaries because I'm sure we're going to have some awesome lives and different things going on there. Over on that day, we will be launching 3 videos as well. So do go over and make sure you subscribe. We have a channel up there already, which you've probably seen in the past. We played around with adding the podcast to YouTube. We've also done a few live streams over there, but now we're going all in on YouTube and we're going to be releasing weekly videos around the business side of motion design. Since we're almost at 100 episodes of this podcast, which seems pretty crazy, I never thought that I would get here, but you know, I've just been continuing to put this podcast out and it's been awesome. This doesn't mean that we're going to stop doing the podcast. We're going to take a little break for sure, but I'm pretty sure the podcast will be back up and running in 2022. So if you want more Motion Hatch content, then do go over to the YouTube channel. So we're going to start creating weekly videos over there to help you grow your motion design business and career. We want to help as many motion designers in the industry as possible. And obviously not all motion designers listen to podcasts, but most people do use YouTube. So this is why we want to start focusing on that as well. Our mission is to impact 100,000 motion designers and help them to grow their motion design businesses and careers. So this is why we've decided to set a pretty big goal for next year, that we want to get 100,000 subs next year. So please, please help me do that. Please help me spread the word of Motion Hatch on YouTube. Go over there and subscribe. I promise there's going to be some really great videos for you. You're going to get a lot out of it. We've been working very, very hard as a team to create these videos for you and I'm really excited about it. So please go over there and subscribe. And I guess, like, why am I telling you this on this podcast episode today? Well, today's podcast episode is actually a behind the scenes interview that I did for our new channel. So I've been interviewing motion designers for a number of videos and this interview was so great that I wanted to share it in full with you today. So I guess it's sort of a sneak peek at the kind of topics that we'll be discussing on our channel. So make sure you subscribe right now. I mean, literally take your phone out of your pocket right now. Go to the YouTube app, search Motion Hatch and click that subscribe button because If you like this podcast, I know that you're going to love what we have coming up on the channel for you. So thanks everybody for listening, and let's get into the episode. Hey, John, thanks so much for being here. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hey, I'm John Filipkowski. I'm a motion designer out of the Chicagoland area, and I've been a motion designer for over 10 years.
Awesome. So, tell me a bit about how you get your clients.
So how I get my clients, it's a mix of two things. One is just networking, my network, and the people, other freelancers that I've talked to and met with and reached out to, they refer me, as well as other clients have referred me as well. And then also a big one recently was just kind of cold emailing, reaching out, finding companies either on websites or like through Instagram and just straight up getting in their DMs or just going on, you know, online and finding the EPs and producers and just reaching out and saying, hey, I love, you know, this project or this project is exactly what I was looking for reference or something else. And just like say, hey, it's awesome. I'd love to connect. If not, like, that's cool. But either way, you're doing some amazing stuff and just wanted to let you know. And I've gotten a lot of great responses and going, and like this connection that I start with them, tends to help me build a network and work. So even though some companies that I've reached out to have never came back with me, but they may have passed my name on to someone else, unbeknownst to me. And that's how I got work. So it's kind of a twofold thing. So I try and always stay on top of the outreach, but also just trying to stay connected to people, you know, and kind of get overflow from other people's works or reach out or people just refer me. Because I just love it, kind of what I love about our industry is, well, 90% of us are just cool people. So we all just want to help each other out. And it's like, I don't know. I find it interesting. All these other industries, people are like slogging through. And most motion designers are like, yeah, like pretty, pretty cool people. So,
yeah. Tell me a bit about how, so when you're initially reaching out to people, you're not going straight in with the like, here's my work, here's, you know, that kind of thing. Tell me a little bit about that. And do you have sort of different stages? Because I know that we've spoken about this a bit in the past. So,
yeah. So the first outreach, if it's on social media, I mean, they can link back to my work. And so if I'm going in their Insta DMs, like, they can find my work and I'll just reach out and say, hey, this looks awesome. Something more than just like a smiley face and a fire emoji, like something like, hey, this is amazing. Like either asking a question or like telling them like, you know, you guys are like the top at this, like the best I've seen, like just something genuine and a little more than like, you know, oh, sweet. And then as far as the emails, I could go a little deeper. And I try and be a little more specific as to what I liked or why I'm reaching out. A lot of times it's when I'm going through either Pinterest or something like doing research for another project, I'll reach out or I'll find some work and I'm like, who did that? And I'll find a studio and I'll just be like, hey, I'm doing another project, but this thing is like crazy awesome. Like your team is amazing. I'd love to be able to collaborate sometime, but you know, otherwise, like, I just wanted to say you guys rock. So, and just leave it at that. Like, don't have to say, like, I try not to push. I'll leave the, hey, if you have any questions about my work, you know, feel free to reach out, but try and leave it more so as much about them as possible. And then just step away. That's been good. Most people, I'd say, because I do a little bit of testing between that and trying to say like, hey, here's my work, here's this. And I get better results with just compliments. At least people say thanks, you know. And then if they say thanks, then it's kind of like a door open. Like, hey, I can reach out again.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like that you experiment. And I think that's really important, like seeing what works, you know, having the two different ways and see what works best. So tell me how you first made six figures.
I first made six figures at a full-time position. So I was in the company for a while and kind of built my way up until that position. And it was kind of like this, I don't know, it was weird. It was like I joined a club, six-figure club, and it felt pretty cool. I was like, yeah, I'm there. Sweet. Now what?
So you were full-time. So what happened? Did you go freelance after that? Because I feel like if you made six figures full-time, it must be really difficult to go from, okay, now I'm like making six figures. So that's pretty sweet. And then if you want to go out on your own, that feels like more scary to me than if you weren't making six figures and then you're like, okay, I'm going to go freelance or something like that.
Yeah, you know, thinking about it now, it probably looks scarier than I thought, but I broke it down. I tend to think it is as kind of rationally as possible. So I break it down into like, okay, what kind of rate do I need to make or ask for per job in order to get this? Now that I'm going to be on my own, I need to be making a certain amount per day or a certain amount per month, and break it down like that. And then it becomes less scary to feel like, you know, can I match what I make full time? Because everyone's like, oh, if you make full time, you know, you get all these benefits and all this, but they don't account. A lot of people don't take into account how much they're taking out for insurance and all this other stuff, at least in the US for insurance and all this other taxes and whatnot. So it really wasn't that scary once I did that. And I started talking to a bunch of other motion designers about what they charge. The full-timers were not as accepting to talk about salaries as much as freelancers. You know, I understand. So I got a kind of a broad range of where I could go with what I wanted. And after breaking it out, I realized I could make six figures and more going freelance. So it wasn't too scary. I was just like, all right, here's my plan. Here's my goal. That's what I need to do. And I just had to do it. Like there was no other choice. So I had just moved into a new house and with a new baby and I had two kids. So I'm like, I have to get food on the table. Do it. There's no turning around and saying like, oh, that's not going to work.
Yeah, that sounds scary and crazy to me because I feel like, you know, you sound like you had more pressure than a lot of people. Like, how did you deal with that? You said you broke it down. What do you mean specifically? How did you do that?
Well, as far as the money goes, like I broke it down and said, okay, 100 grand a year, like how many... In my mind, like you still got to take account into vacations because I don't want to work 52 weeks a year every single week. I mean, and offices aren't open on a lot of holidays too. So you break it down into like, what is that? Like 11 months, 10 months out of the year. Okay. Let's just say how many days are those? Like Monday through Friday. You break that down. So here's a chunk of days, you know, whether it's 200, 300 days. And then divide that by 100,000 or whatever you want your salary to be. And be like, okay, daily, I need to make X amount of money. And so, okay, so daily, you could break it down and say, well, there's average 30 days in a month. Here's how much I need to make in a month. And so that way I can take multiple jobs and say like, okay, so let's say each month I need to make $2,000. You know, then I know that's my goal. I don't have to think hourly anymore. I don't have to think daily. I just think, here's my jobs. Here's what I need to do. And then you can break it down further saying like, what if I have a great month and I make like 10,000 one month? Then do I say like, oh, sweet. If I only needed 2,000 a month, like, can I take 4 months off? Like, sure, if you want to. And then just take that, you know, and space it out. Or I could continue and make more money, hopefully. So. That's how I broke that down. And then as far as the stress from having two kids and a new house, I put all of my stress into outreach. So I turned into an email writing machine. I hated writing emails. I hated writing. I hated saying anything. Like, I felt so self-conscious about it. And after you write the first 50, 60 emails, like, you're fine with it. And you start to create a template too, in a sense, you know, which is very helpful. But that's where I kind of channeled it. And I put a lot of that stress into outreach and even just accepting that I wasn't going to get a lot of return emails, and just the one or two, I just took those people and I was like, yes. And it helped me release the stress. And I'm like, you're the one out of the 30 emails I just sent out last week. Thank you. I was just like, you know, trying to accept it for what it is. And it's tough.
So you said like one out of 30. Is that typical for you? Because I've heard this before, that kind of one in 30 is sort of coming up again and again. And I'm just trying to dig into that a little bit because I want to give people a gauge.
I'd say on average, like, sometimes I have a great month where there's like multiple people reach out. And I think it has to do with timing of whether they're busy or not, or whether I, you know, reached out to some people that like specifics about my work. But I'd say if I took the year and I had all the emails I wrote for the year, it was probably about, yeah, one out of 30, which sucks. But like I said, it gives you practice on writing emails, which is always a good thing to have, like sloppy emails and poor, like, this is, you're speaking, like, this is like what people read. So imagine them reading this back to you in the voice that they hear you with. And if it's all like, I don't know, sloppy, it's just, yeah. So practice makes perfect. That's what I'm trying to get at.
If you had one piece of advice for freelancers looking to make six figures, what would that be?
Okay. What I think is, don't be afraid to charge more. I think you're worth more than you think you are. And you're the only one holding you back from earning more money. So go out there and go big. What's the worst that could happen? They say no. And then you say, okay, what is your budget? And then they give you a lower number and you're like, okay, yes or no. Go for the, I had to pass on a lot of quality work and go for work that made more money. So don't be afraid to like be that corporate guy for a bit. If you got to pay the bills, you got to pay the bills. Not everyone could be like superstar motion designer every day. You know, maybe you can, but if you need to pay the bills, don't be ashamed. Like, we're all doing it. There's a dirty little secret of all studios that they have a whole plethora of corporate work that they don't want to show that pays the bills. And the stuff you see on their website, that pays nothing. So just a little fun tip. And then also outreach. It's like, just keep reaching out, whether it's internal network or new people. Like, I can't stress it enough how many times, just in the past year that I reached out, even 2 years ago that I haven't like talked to again, they reach out to me randomly because I'm on some list somewhere and they need help. So get your name out there and just keep, feel like Gary Vaynerchuk, just hustle. That's what it is. It's like, just keep going. I had this motivation of like, I got to put food on the table and I'm going to out hustle all these motion designers. Like, no one's going to write more emails than me. I'm going to outwrite all of you MoGraphers and you're not going to stop me. And I'm going to keep doing it and I'm going to keep going. And then you're going to see me everywhere and you're going to be like, how does that guy have time for his kids? And you're going to say, you know what? I charge him more than you do too. So I got time for everything.
I'm laughing, but I'm totally on board. I love, you know, the consistent outreach and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I'm all about that. Tell me what your goal is now that you've reached six figures.
My goal now, after I've reached six figures, is more balance in life. Like, I've seen that I can reach a certain level that I wanted to monetarily. And that's great. And I use that as a confidence booster to know that I can continue to push that. But the real balance now is just trying to balance work and life. And I know there's no perfect work-life balance. I think everyone's striving for this perfect, but there isn't. But at least somewhere in between there. That's really what I'm going for. So, like, right now I walk my kids to school in the morning. I have coffee with my wife, and then I do some work, and then I change some diapers. I take a meeting, and then I do some work, and then I pick my kids up from school, and then I like eat dinner with them, and then I do some work later. And like, I can do all that knowing that the relationships I've built trust me to get the work done and get the job done. And they will pay me for it, so I don't have to worry about paying like money to pay bills, and I feel comfortable and just trying to keep that lifestyle, because that to me is more important than like working on some crazy superstar amazing movie.
So how do you build that trust in the first place?
To build trust with your client, I feel like you just need to, it's under promise, over deliver every single time. And always be looking out for your client's best interests. I try my best to help them out whenever I can, whether that's if they're just like, oh, hey, you know, I need to throw this in, like a little added. Let's say they want a 30-second video and they're like, oh, is there any way I could just get like a 5-second snippet for social media? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, is that gonna, I don't have a real budget for it. You're just like, fine, just tack it on. We'll, you know, just little things. Or like, you know, you're working with them and they're having struggling with some other part of it. Maybe you can, you know, give them some tips on, you know, how to work with editors or how to handle something else. And it's just like trying to build trust in a way that's like they can give you a job and don't have to worry about you taking any stress off of their plate. Is just gonna want them to come back to you, because, you know, they're people. They're people like us. We all have our stresses. We go home and we're all like, ugh, that guy sucked. Or, you know, and who knows what? Like, boss is horrible. And, it's, you know, just having someone to work with and talk to and just being able to take away a little bit of that stress from your daily is someone that they're gonna come back to.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I feel like that's why I've done well in my past, you know, jobs as a motion designer and stuff like that, is, you know, try and, I guess, like, be indispensable in a way that you're sort of helping them and taking the stress away from them, like you said. I think that's really, I think it's like the wise thing to do. And maybe some times people don't realize that and they think it's more about the work and how good your work is, but it isn't really always about that.
100%. And I feel like some people are so focused on getting this certain style or like being the best at this, and they don't focus on their soft skills, their people skills, that they miss out. Because I forgot where I read it, but like, you know, the deals don't get made in the office. The deals get made, you know, on the course, I think it was, like on the golf course. And it's like the people who have the social skills and the know-how to like talk and really understand other people, I feel like are going to get further faster than those who necessarily have these specific technical skills. Now, you can't be some schlub, I'll tell you that much, you know, but you gotta be able to walk the walk if you talk the talk, but at least like you can get to start talking.
What do you say when a client says that you're too expensive?
So if a client says I'm too expensive, usually I can tell. I try with especially new clients to get on the phone with them as soon as possible, just to kind of get a feeling for them. And a lot of times they'll say like, well, we did this on Fiverr or some other place, or they had multiple other people and they just charged too much. And I can tell them, I see where this is going. And, you know, if someone says I charge too much, I just try and ask them, like, what are you looking for then? Do you want just something slapped together? Or do you want a quality piece that is going to get you results? And are you willing to pay for that?
So do you have any horror stories about client communication?
Yeah, so I've got a horror story. So I was starting a job. This was the first job with a new client, and I talked with them about kind of my method of how I work, from like starting out kind of rough drafts and kind of like, you know, like just getting them a first pass, if you will, and it's rough and stuff. And then we continue to move on and flesh stuff out, and the story goes as the story goes on. And so I sent them the first rough cut, and they're like, what's this? And I'm like, well, this is like, you know, we talked about the rough pass, and they're like, have you done this before? I was like, what do you mean? They're like, do you actually know how to do motion graphics? I'm like, are you seriously? Like, and they just kept digging in and digging in about how horrible I was and how horrible this piece was and how embarrassed they were, and they couldn't show it to the client. I'm just like, but we like talked. And so like, I felt so defeated. Yeah. So after he told me he hated it and all that, we got off the phone and I wrote up an email. And I was just like, you know, I think there's a miscommunication. My idea of a rough cut is this, and here's yours. And he's like, yeah, I was a little harsh. But, you know, we need something that is more than that in order for us to show this client. And, you know, it was a bit tough because they had meetings too. And so I needed to get something better looking out quickly. So it was rough, and I like still felt horrible, like I'm the worst motion designer ever, and like I'm creating this and I'm like, this is, I'm just the worst, this is horrible, this is the worst. And the whole time I'm creating this and slogging, it was a long night, and I got out the next day and they're super appreciative. It was, but you know, the relationship there will always be like, this person thinks I'm an amateur and that I had just started and I was a liar. So the communication, I just try and get it out there and be as descriptive as possible and say, like, a rough cut means rough. Like, we're not talking like almost done. We're saying like stuff is going to look like busted. So I've also had people, we get to the very end, close to the very end of the job, and they're like, you know what? I don't like this anymore. And they just want to change it, the whole thing. And they caught me off guard. I don't know what to say. You're just like, okay. They're like, great, get on that. And then they hang up. And I'm like,
so what do you do in that situation?
Going back to, I write emails saying, hey, I'll first write an angry email, like getting out all my frustrations and how horrible they are. And then I'll delete it. And then I'll write the real email and saying what my concerns are about that and what we talked about, and going back to, you know, previous emails and discussions, and always have a paper trail, kids. Always have a paper trail. You have conversations, you write that sucker up in email and send it and be like, here's what we talked about today. A little summary. And then you can always go back and be like, see this right here.
So how can motion designers raise their rates?
How can motion designers raise their rates? One way that I found is if you are in a good position to not be very desperate for work, just do it. Whether it's a new client, or, well, new clients is easier. You could say like, here's my rate, and they don't know any difference. Or if it's an older client, just be like, hey, you know, it's moving forward. I'm on a new rate. And if they're in a position where they really need someone, they're probably going to pay it. My thing is, if you see it, this goes back to what I always tell people, is like network, continue to network and be open about your rates. It's okay. Like we're all charging something. So let's be open and let's all make more money. Why not? So be open, find other people in your, you know, wavelength, what they're charging, and just keep slowly upping it, whether it's $50, $100, $10 more, whatever it is. Just keep inching, keep going.
What's the biggest mistake that you see freelancers make?
I think there's a couple. I think one is being taking the rate that you owe, not charging more. Big mistake I see freelancers making is not charging enough, not charging more. We can all continue to push these rates up and go higher. I mean, this is called inflation, people. Let's raise it up. I also feel that freelancers need to think about, you know, what else can you help out the client with? It's not just the work, but is there other aspects, you know, that you can be of service to them with, whether that's, you know, just giving them, advice, or like little, like, you know, sometimes they give you a job and they're like, okay, here's, you know, here's what we need. If you've got a better way, you know, that might look better or sell the product better, or just, you know, some sort of, you know, tidbit that could help, like, be, it's okay to speak up, like, speak about it and don't hold back. Cause I've seen a lot of people like have great ideas and they're just like, hey, you know, I don't want to push any buttons. It's like, no, they're going to love you. If you, this like either saves us time, saves us money, or looks way cooler and in the same budget, like, say it.
So what business ideas are you excited about that you don't see other freelancers taking advantage of?
You know, I think you've touched on it in a podcast. It's just like taking assets and stuff you've made before and turning it into elements and stuff that you can sell on the side and not even have to think about. Like, I know, you know, Video Hive and Vado, like those marketplaces are overloaded, but there's always new stuff. And who says you can't sell it on your own site and market it differently? You know, you've got clients, you've got people, like, sell them templates, sell them, you know, assets. Like, you made a whole bunch of rain come on a shot and suddenly you've got all these different rain elements that you could just hand off to sell to your editor friends or something, like, and they could pass it on. And like just figuring out like what you've created in the past and like just throw it out there, you know it can't hurt. It's otherwise it's just sitting on your hard drive. Like, that excites me. I hadn't started thinking about that until you started bringing it up and you had the guy on there talking about his Final Cut Pro stuff, and I was just like, oh man, like I've got stuff I've made for other programs that I'm like, I'll never use that, and then I'm like, I can dig that up and just sell it. Like, why not? Like, what's it gonna hurt? You put it together, you take some time up front, and then you see what works. So I like that. I don't see many people doing it. I don't, like, there's people whose businesses are solely that, but like in my circle of friends and my motion designers, like, I rarely see that. So that to me, it's like, feels new.
Thanks to John again for coming on the show and sharing all of his knowledge and being so open and honest with us today. So remember, if you want more content like this, then do make sure you hop over to our YouTube channel and you subscribe. We'll put all the links as usual at motionhatch.com/97. Thank you so much to everybody for listening, and I'll see you next time.